show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, a brand new broadcast week dawns, or, well, kind of the wrong time of day for any dawning to be going on, but, well, you get the idea. It's a brand new broadcast week here on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. March is on the way out. Seems like hardly any time since we were bidding an absolutely giddy, joyous farewell to February, but my gracious sakes, March, well, it came in like a lion and left like a gazelle. Never mind the lamb. It will march around here. We'll be exiting like a lamb, and it did enter like a lion, so it stayed true to form without a doubt. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy in Vermont, noting loud and clear on TuneIn. Much appreciated, because we don't have an air monitor around here as such, because you really can't do that with the interweb tubes. It would be madness, I tell you. Madness. Good gang gathering in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. That's where we live, you know, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. The chat room is the sort of home base for the real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the conversation that takes place among the Hornganistas during airtime. Good evening to Gerald. Good evening to Jeremy in Vermont and Jug of Punch. Good evening to Texas T. News Ninja Carol Baker just wandered in. Good evening, Will from Chicago. And good evening to P. Zhang. Welcome one, welcome all. Of course, among other things, this is a listener-supported radio network. We're running with a tailwind right now out of March and hopefully going to get a leg up on April. And to that end, let's see, I want to send out thanks, very kindly thanks to Chris and to Bill and to Roger in Oregon. Thank you very kindly, all of you. You have taken the March fundraising goal. Well, we will finish March ahead of the game if we raise, hang on, $160. Between now and tomorrow evening, if we raise $160 this evening, that means that's much, because we are about that close to actually being caught up on every bill that we have, which is freaking awesome, I gotta say. And thank you to everybody who has made that happen, one and all. So the PayPal interface is at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There are some sort of pushy queries there on that first screen. You can ignore them. You know, the one about the number of times you missed Sunday school when you were a kid because you dodged out the back door to go and play hooky and smoke with the sinners. You don't have to fill that one out. No. Just about getting to the next screen. So any denomination, any amount, and frankly, just because it's 160 doesn't mean it can't be 200 or 300 or whatever. We're trying to, you know, this is all just about staying afloat, frankly. And it's been, like I said, it's been very inspiring to see how things have worked out. We have gotten to where we are through a lot of dedication and a lot of kindness. And thank you. Thank you, one and all, and particular thanks to a few folks. And I think you know who you are. Of course, participation by the U.S. Postal Service is always welcome. I need to remember to Jesus, I need a 2-week vacation just to work on the website. because, among other things, I need to get the mailing address up there. The mailing address, for those of you who wish to participate by the U.S. Postal Service, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. And all checks and money orders should be made payable not to Bob Kincaid, but to The Horn, because Boss Man Wayne is the one who collects the mail, and Boss Man Wayne is the one who deals with the checks and the money orders and gets the bill paying done. So that's why that is that way. Okay, wonderful. So maybe that'll be the last mention of this for the evening. I hope so. It is, of course, the 30th day of March. March is almost done. You can tell how far afield I've gone from the Christianity in which I was raised, in as much as I didn't realize that Sunday was Palm Sunday, which means I also didn't realize that, I guess, this Sunday is Easter. When Jesus went up on the cross so chickens could lay chocolate eggs or something like that. Mummy, a goldfish left Lincoln logs in me sock drawer, and that's the story of Easter. Thank you, Bill Hicks. Peace be upon him. The prophet, Bill Hicks. But no, so March wears out in this month, and we start April on Wednesday. Program note. There is a possibility there will be no prayer meeting Wednesday, because I have to I have to take Agnes over to Roane County to attend to some things that have to be attended to on April Fool's Day. No, we're not pranking anybody, darn the luck, but that's just how it works out. I'll try to be back in time for prayer meeting Wednesday, but there's no guarantee. Let's see. So, yeah, Monday, 30th of March, 2015. Oh, wait, what? Yes, it is Moran Monday on the Horn. And we have an absolute cage-rattling festival of them for you this evening. And I think it's just as well that we kind of go ahead and, you know, get started. I mean, I've had the Calliope warming up for a while now. Yeah?
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
I told you I had the Calliope all hotted up. Yes, indeed. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, you will hear Morans the likes of which you can scarcely imagine. We have them all, friends and neighbors, kiddies and cousins, aunts and uncles. We have every last kind of Moran conceivable under the sun. We have birther Morans, deather Morans, ninther Morans, tenther Morans, booger-eating Morans, vircher Morans, bagger Morans, libertarian Morans, republican Morans, one and all. Yes, indeed, it costs us about 5 cents per hour of programming to bring you the Moran Monday tent every week. And for that small and simple fee, you can peer behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas at a veritable scourge of Morans. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. We advise that anyone carrying bags, wallets, purses, small children, puppies on leashes, have them all in arm, as the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, you'll bet be up to your armpits and Morans. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And where to begin? Let's see. Well, I think the leading contenders for this Moran Monday have to center on Indianistan and its Moran governor, Mike Pence. But we've also got some potential in the anti-vaxxer arena. Yes, that ring over there. What else? Hey, wait. Here, this is fun. You know, we specialize in birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, birchers, and... Right. And it's been a while since we have heard from this particular Moran, and he is a particular Moran, even perhaps a peculiar Moran. He is a Moran among Morans. Yes, I'm talking about Alan Keyes. Now, Alan Keyes showed up on the inexplicable as to how electrons will even agree to carry his image out there, Steve Maltzberg show, which, by virtue of the fact that it is denominated a show, tells you that it's for entertainment purposes and in no wise intended as anything serious, because if you were serious, you'd never have Alan Keyes on your program. But it's been a while since we've had anybody run out there and holler, Muslim! So it's only fitting that the person doing it should probably be, yeah, Alan Keyes. Oh, my God. Wait a minute. Okay, here we go.
To hear that, according to a reporter who was covering these talks, Laura Rosen, in Switzerland for the DC-based online publication Al Monitor.
Wait! What? Has Sharia law come to America? Oh no! Oh, heavens forbid! Goodness me! And it appears that they've done got John Kerry. Oh God.
John Kerry, when asked in a deli or a grocery store, will there be a deal, he said, Allah willing.
It wouldn't surprise.
John Kerry done said Allah willing. And there he is with a good Irish name. What happens to lead such a good Catholic boy astray? But they've done converted him to the Sharia law. And just being around them Persians over there, them Iranians, has rubbed off on him. Oh, God, he said, God willing, in Arabic. Oh, God. No, really. They're down to having hissies about that now. Let's not miss out on any of the fun. No, heavens to Betsy, no.
Restore, will there be a deal? He said, Allah willing.
It wouldn't surprise me. I think, unhappily, it's the mentality that's been dominant in the Obama administration. They have got a commitment, not only, by the way, to Islam and forces in Islam that have been deeply inimical to the United States, but they have, in this particular instance, a commitment to one of the most...
Well, I'm glad that it's particular in this particular instance, because Alan Keyes is a particular right-winger, and... Well, if a particular monster can't have a particular hairdo, I don't know. Oh, that's never going to hold. Bobby pins, please.
Active governmental forces that has been sponsoring terrorism against the United States and organizations that target the United States, because that's true on both sides, right? Whether you're talking about the Sunni or the Shiites, they have terrorist organizations hostile to the United States in both camps. And what I think is quite telling is not, though, the Islamic commitment, even though I think there was a certain dishonesty about the way that this man ran for office, right? Who knew he was going to be the first Islamic president?
Bing, ding, 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 ding. Oh, I forgot to issue the hockey puck warning, didn't I? Bad, Bob, bad. Oh. Well, that's great, great, great moments in Moran Monday wing nuttery. Let's hear that again, sports fans.
commitment, even though I think there was a certain dishonesty about the way that this man ran for office, right? Who knew he was going to be the first Islamic president? This was not even allowed to become a focus of any interest because he lied about it, and is still lying, in my opinion. But leave that aside. The question is the Islamic bomb, the Iranian bomb.
Yep.
And whether we're going to tolerate a negotiating approach that essentially comes to a deal that allows it to move forward.
Okay, so I got a question. You can tell that Alan Keyes thinks a lot about framing issues and the like, because it's no longer the question of whether or not Iran will get a nuclear device, or are they trying to achieve a nuclear device, or even an atomic bomb. No, no, no. Did you notice there? That was cute. That was kind of precious. The Islamic bomb. Yeah, instead of blasting everything away and bathing your country, your region, your province, your neighborhood, your city in deadly radiation and toxic fallout. No, it rains down Sharia law on you because it's an Islamic bomb. Which kind of begs the question, does that mean that the 200 in excess of 200 nuclear weapons possessed by Israel, does that mean that those are Hasidic bombs? Because we know that the hard right wing controls Israel to the point that there are, you know, they've got segregated buses over there. No, really. To the point that men refuse to sit next to women on airplanes because, you know, women carry the guilt of Eve and they're all sinful and icky and gross and nasty and filthy and disgusting, and God doesn't like them, and that's why he made them women. So do we talk about the... Wow. These miserable pukes want World War III so bad they can taste it, don't they? Or, barring that, civil war would be fine. He was our first Islamic president. Ah, true, true. thank you, News Ninja Carol Baker. I knew there had to be a joke there somewhere. Every Sunday is Palm Sunday for those who masturbate, like, you know, everybody. What is it, 50% of the people in America masturbate and the other 50% are lying? That old joke. But yeah. We apparently John Kerry said inshallah, and maybe. But look, he's trying to be a diplomat. Now, granted, the United States is not now, nor ever has it been, much good in the world of diplomacy. But you gotta give John Kerry points for trying. He said inshallah. God willing. But don't worry. I couldn't help but notice that the negotiations, if the news that I followed over the weekend is to be believed, the negotiations are in trouble. You know, they set a self-imposed deadline of March the 31st for reaching the framework for a larger agreement. Well, over the weekend, the wires were abuzz with the fact that apparently Iran had waffled on one key component of the framework, to wit, the idea that would have permitted their fissile materials to be transshipped out of country, you know, taken away from them. Which really does kind of defeat the whole trying to have a civilian nuclear program. I personally don't think the Iranians need a civilian nuclear program. But then again, I don't think the Japanese need one, the Germans need one, the Americans need one, the Aussies need one, the South Africans need one, the French need one. I don't think anybody needs a civilian nuclear program, because it's a great way to stop having a habitable planet. Ask the folks in Fukushima. Ask the folks in Chernobyl. Ask the folks in Three Mile Island. And then, of course, you know, right there where I grew up, we came near to being a crater too. Well, not really a crater, just, you know, core on the floor. China syndrome, you know, where the core melts through to China, right? We came close to that when the, as it was always explained to me, when the geniuses were inspecting for gas leaks at the Browns Ferry nuclear plant, and they were doing it with a lit candle, and they found one, and, well, party on. And that's the kind of thing you can have with you know, nuclear radiation. Yeah, Marty, that's true. I left out Nagasaki. I also left out Hiroshima. I also left out a big chunk of Nevada and New Mexico, because we kind of nuked our own country before we nuked anybody else's. We just tried to make sure there weren't any people around. Turned out it didn't work, because there were huge cancer clusters and maybe a few still tottering about. But anyway, it appears that our negotiations, the first thing I thought of, because I'm that way, because I'm a huge nerd, the first thing I thought of when I heard about, you know, that key piece of the framework falling apart was, hey, look, it's the Third Punic War all over again. Yes, the Bikini Atoll, thank you, Gerald. We nuked a lot of places, and then there's the places in French Polynesia that the French nuked, and I'm not sure who the British nuked, but somebody in the Horn Family Commune congregation will tell me, and God only knows who the Russians nuked. In the way of, you know, testing. So, yeah. And then there's, there was a nuclear device that was detonated just off the Atlantic seaboard. It was meant for Charleston, South Carolina. Just ask lifelong educator, Mrs. Virginia Ellifors, who can scream he's a communist dictator louder than just about anyone in South Carolina. Ask her. Mm-hmm. You betcha. Yeah. So that's how it rolls. But no, it reminded me of the Third Punic War, because what Rome did in the Third Punic War is they set up a series of conditions for the Carthaginians that the Carthaginians could never live up to. And no matter how hard they tried, there was some Roman senator on a bench back in Rome hollering, Carthago delenda est! Carthage must be destroyed. We saw all that played out when George W. Bush decided to attack the innocent people of Iraq who had never done anything to him. Or us, for that matter. Well, they tried to kill his daddy. Never mind that there was a war going on, but, yeah, well, you know. So... Oh, okay, thank you. There's our answer. Who did the British nuke in their testing? Randy in PA noting, the British nuked the Australian Outback, as some of the Aussie members of the Horn Family Commune congregation may bear out. Oh, and also Bimini Atoll. Bimini? Off the Florida coast, did we nuke Bimini? Well, a question coming in from Ron in Raleigh, who was at least temporarily celebrating the demise of the University of North Carolina in the tournament. Sorry, Scott. Oh. Subject line, who let him out? I thought Alan Keyes was still institutionalized. Who let this crazy bastard out? I know. It's been a while since I heard his fluty, reedy voice. That's why I felt like he deserved pride of place this evening. But no, you may recall that no matter how many times Saddam Hussein or anybody else associated with that regime said, listen, we're not kidding, we don't have any nuclear devices, we're not developing any nuclear devices, we don't have any weapons of mass destruction, the only weapons of mass destruction we ever had were the ones we bought from you, from your defense secretary, George, the ones that we bought from, Donald Rumsfeld and used on the Iranians, and it blew back on us, and yeah, we did, but we got them from you. We don't have any plans to have any, and no matter how many times they said they didn't have any, what did George W. Bush and the loyal Bushies say? Well, obviously he's lying because, you know, he's Saddam Hussein, and Saddam Hussein is a liar who tried to kill my daddy. Right? Yeah, see, I didn't think we knew. All right, I didn't think we did Bimini. It was Bikini, and I said Bikini. There'll be some time in the penalty box for that, Marty. And Robert in Australia following up. Yep, there it is. Bob, the British tested their nukes here in Australia. I believe they used an island off the coast of Western Australia and later inland South Australia. Because commies. Right? Yeah. So it really doesn't... I mean, Ed, this is just my opinion. I don't think it really matters what the Iranians do or don't do. To use the colloquial, little Timmy, little Cindy, might be good to wander out of the room for a minute. Uncle Bob's going to use a fun word. 4, 3, 2, 1. Shit is getting real over there. The Saudi Air Force decided to pound the bejesus out of Sana'a, Yemen, because they claim that the Yemeni rebels are being backed by the Iranians. The Iranians, meanwhile, are fighting against ISIS, ISIL, whatever we call them. And, well, like I said, I don't think it matters a damn what the Iranians do or don't do vis-a-vis the nuclear program they have, in which the world's intelligence agencies have said, no, they're really not trying to get a nuclear device. I got a feeling at some point we're going to get our war on. Oh, hey, I didn't realize that. Jeremy in Vermont pointing out not only did we nuke Bikini Atoll, but we also thought it was a great place to dump mustard gas shells into the ocean. Because, after all, a planet that is comprised of two-thirds water, well, water, like from the toilet? Exactly. It's just one, that all those oceans, just one big toilet. Mm-hmm. I mean, we think we've come a long way from, say, medieval Europe, when people just threw their poop out into the streets. But really, no. Not so much. Not really. But anyway, it doesn't matter what the Iranians do or don't do. We're going to have us some war. And if we don't have it between now and January 20th, 2017, we will, by God, have it in the immediate days following January the 20th, 2017, after America's first Muslim president, see how it comes back around, circles within circles, is gone from office. And all the little right-wingers who wanted their country back can have their country back, because there won't be one of those people in our White House anymore. Right? And so, you know, and I'm sure the Hitlery faction of the so-called left in this country, what left, please, is saying, well, you know, she'll probably nuke Iran because she's a bloodthirsty war hawk, neoliberal, blah, yada, 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 much of which is probably true. I mean, we've got a real hard on for Iran, don't we? Mm-hmm. We really do. Ron and Raleigh noting by email, is it just me, Bob, or does the U.S. believe that Iran owes us something for fucking up their democracy in 1953? Where is there any evidence they want to build a nuke? Oh, well, I kind of. Ron says, P.S., don't forget Alamogordo. Well, I wasn't. That's why I just generally mentioned New Mexico and Nevada. Well, we I think more than anything, we feel like we owe Iran something for the embassy business. And we, because I mean, I remember when that happened, and there were novelty songs out that was a parody of the Beach Boys' Barbara Ann, bum 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 Iran, bum bum, yeah, all of that. What was the first? Obama ran, we'll take your land. We're going to rock your Ayatollah, sock your Ayatollah, bomb Iran, bomb, 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 bomb Iran. And now, you know, now we've got Benjamin Netanyahu there to sing two or three part harmony with whatever parties that he hooks up with. Morons, morons. But that's not all the morons we have. We got lots of morons this evening. We are 31 minutes into the program, and I want to extend thanks to Reinhard. Thank you very kindly, Reinhard. I hope your recovery is going well. You may recall last month, Reinhard provided the first Have a Show on Me, or for that matter, I think the first contribution we've ever received from a surgical recovery unit, listening to the recovering from abdominal surgery and listening in the hospital. That must have been just a blast. No, surgery's never any fun. But thank you, Reinhard. Reinhard just got us started for the live portion of the program, with leaving us with $60 to go in fundraising to finish off the month of March, and from there we'll try to get a jump on the month of April. So thank you, Reinhard. Thank you very kindly. Gerald with a note. No, Bob, I don't have a hard-on for Iran, but our government sure as hell does. I'm all for leaving them the hell alone and minding our own damn business. But that's just me. And, you know, it's just me, too. Many of us took Mama's advice to heart early on, right after potty training, and right after keep your hands to yourself. Then came mind your own business. And a certain portion, as we've seen in the last couple of weeks, a certain segment of this society finds mind your own business very difficult. John Bolton wants war so bad he can taste it. Who was that asshat from Johns Hopkins University that said, war? Well, heck yeah, war, let's have some war. As long as I don't have to fight it, mind you. Jim noting by email, 1914 into the Middle East. Like walking in a room filled with gunpowder and a lighted cigarette. Yep. Anybody got a match? You know, it's not so much 1914 as it is Bugs Bunny and Yosemite Sam aboard the pirate ship. You know the one where Bugs lights the match and throws it into the powder room and Sam, I'm not going to go and get that. Nope, nope. No. And then finally does it. Boom! Yeah. The stupid is strong with us. Because, you know, you have to have a certain degree of stupid to want to mind somebody else's business instead of your own. But all of this business of negotiating with the Iranians, to a certain extent, is Shakespearean dumb show. Because it would still have to be acted upon by the Senate, and the Senate majority is in the thrall, if not the pay, of Benjamin Netanyahu. And do you think any treaty negotiated by the president with Iran would have a snowball's chance in perdition in the United States Senate, but I repeat myself? But we got more morons. We got lots and lots of morons, definitely morons, lots and lots of morons. Chappie Gordon Klingenschmidt, for instance, is a Moran. And, of course, we had the great big Chappie steps in it, sticks one foot in his mouth, and then wedges the other one in there with it last week when he declared that his loving, all-merciful God had decided to have a woman attacked and cut open and her fetus killed in order to collectively punish the nation for allowing women to choose what happens in their own reproductive systems. And when last we checked in with Chappie, he was being quite unrepentant. But look, listen. Chappie has decided that he likes being a politician. He got those front feet in the political trough, and I mean, he got the slop up to his knees, and he was just getting ready to work the back trotters in there with him, and then he did that to himself. And suddenly, Chappie's realizing that here in another year or so, year and a half, change, he might not be a politician no more and would have to go back to his only gig being his little internet Jesus hustle. Hence, the heartfelt apology.
Moment and issue a public apology for some words that I said on this show in a previous broadcast. When we previously reported this story last week, I was angry. And maybe you can understand a little bit of my righteous anger against...
Yeah, wait. It's not working, Chappie. You're explaining you were angry, and then you describe your anger as having been righteous anger. That's not going to play with the Wilkins family or with most decent human beings. I got an idea that he got told it was time to apologize somewhere along the way, or that he really, you know, really, really, really wouldn't sit more than one term in the Colorado House of Representatives. But still, it's tough. You know, he's a gospel sharp, and he's not in the business of being wrong. Being a gospel sharp, he's supposed to be right about everything, right?
Maybe you can understand a little bit of my righteous anger against the perpetrator of this horrific crime.
Wait, what? He was angry against the woman who attacked the pregnant woman? And that's why he said his God decided to punish the pregnant woman for everything that every other woman who's ever dealt with her own reproductive issues has ever done? Have I got that right? I think I've got that right.
Against the demonic spirit of murder that this human cooperated with voluntarily and...
Evidence? Evidence? I mean, does he know something we don't know? Did they go in and find pentagrams on the floor with a little stick figure baby in the middle of it, or you know, chicken feathers, or, you know, five shiny dimes, or... perhaps a half a jug of rum or any of that kind of, really voluntarily coordinate. Oh, so he's mad at the demon. Well, aren't we all?
The tragic act of violence against this innocent woman, I was angry.
Good for you, Chappie. You were angry. Yeah, you were angry. What he's really angry about is the fact that he's having to do what he's doing now.
And I said some things that were insensitive and offensive to many of you.
No, Chappie. They weren't insensitive and offensive. They were just hateful. Because you serve a hateful God, Chappie. You really do. You serve a God who does collectively punish enacts individual punishments for collective collective wrongdoing, even if the wrongdoing in question is completely legal and a matter of constitutional right. But then again, you know, you're a theocrat. You're about the left cheek of a gnat's ass away from the mullahs of the Taliban and that ilk. But still, no. Mm-mm.
And for that, I apologize. I do want to apologize for my words last week because I was so angry that I forgot to be compassionate.
I don't think you forgot diddly, Chappie. There's not 10 cents worth of compassion in you. And you know, where, and as noted when we were going over this last week, where was Chappie? Because Chappie's still out there and he's all worked up about where people go potty. And he's 17 shades of pissed off about whether or not somebody's wearing pants, leggings, capris, shorts, that wants to know what kind of underwear. Hey, pardon me, what kind of underwear are you wearing in the name of Jesus? Right. Nah, not so much in the way of compassion. He'll be back next week all pissed off about something. Let's see. Yeah, that's right. Transgender people driven by a demonic, predatory spirit of sexual exploitation. That's what he said about the LGBT community. The T part of the LGBT community. Forgot to be compassionate some more, I guess.
My words were not compassionate, and therefore I apologize. My tone was wrong. My choice of words was wrong. My choice of scripture was wrong. Everything I did about that report was wrong.
Well, first of all, it wasn't a report, Chappie. You're not a journalist. You're a hustler. You're a gospel sharp. You're an evil jealousist. So it wasn't a report. It was just a religious insanity fueled screed. But we get your point. I mean, he's trying real hard here. I just don't feel particularly compelled, seeing how I don't participate in his religion. I don't feel compelled to forgive, do you? Mm-mm. Me neither. We'll leave that to his great big bearded juvenile delinquent friend in the sky to do the forgiving. But me, no. That's like a spirit of forgiveness toward Westboro Baptist. Not going to happen.
And honestly, I apologize to you, Dan and Michelle Wilkins. I apologize to you, the viewers. I apologize to the voters and constituents of Colorado Springs.
Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner. Please let me go back and be in the legislature some more. We're so close to having the religious theocratic dictatorship that I so thoroughly yearn for and masturbate over furiously. Please, please, don't turn me out. They're going to, I mean, come on. Well, look, 70% of them said, yeah, we want you, Chappie, to go and represent us in the Colorado House of Representing. So, if he can keep from losing, 19, any more than 19.9%, he should be okay.
And anybody out there who actually did hear my accurate reporting and was a...
Oh, his accurate reporting. Now he is a journalist. Bless my soul. I had one. See, he was doing pretty good for a while. That almost felt like it was it wasn't a non-apology apology, but they can't help themselves, can they?
As to you, Dan and Michelle Wilkins, I apologize to you, the viewers. I apologize to the voters and constituents of Colorado Springs.
Yeah, yeah.
And anybody out there who actually did hear my accurate reporting and was offended by my insensitive words, I apologize to you.
Which part of the reporting was accurate? The part where you said that your loving God punished an individual woman blameless for things that you perceive to be great moral wrongs done by people that you don't even know? Did that part of the accurate reporting, Chappie? You dick? No. I should never say that. I should let Spicoli say that.
You dick!
Because he says it's so much better than I. Yeah. Uh-oh. This from News Ninja Carol Baker. Chappie, what kind of underwear I'm wearing for Jesus? I'm going commando for the Lord. Sounds like fun. You know, it'll soon be warm enough here for me to start doing naked radio again. I mean, there are some things even the heated floor mat can't help. And it just doesn't radiate enough. No. Well, that's true, Marty. Marty asking, doesn't a heartfelt apology require having a heart first? Yeah, it kind of does. That's how that works. Oh, what else? Because there is so much. Well, since we're in the land of bigotry, might as well stay there. Probably, if you pay any attention to Meet the Prestitutes this week or whatever, you know, all the Sunday shows just rolled together in a great big Republican lump, you might have noticed that the big get for the past weekend on the Sunday shows was Talibandiana Governor-in-Chief Head Mullah Mike Pence. He showed up over on ABC's This Week with George Snuffleupagus, who we wish was more like a real Snuffleupagus insofar as the only person who can see a real Snuffleupagus is Big Bird, and wouldn't we all be better off if he was the only one who could see George Snuffleupagus? Well, too bad. But bless his heart, and we all know what that means when it's spoken with a southern accent, right? Bless his heart, George Snuffleupagus had Mike Pence on, and the stupid rolled like a mighty river. Because, see, you stupid liberal, you dumbass progressive, you hate-filled member of the left wing, the liberal media, y'all don't understand that all Talibandiana's done is protect religious freedom, which is always under assault in America. All them atheists all the time trying to keep everybody from having a religion. Except they don't. But nobody... Mike Pence is misunderstood. Don't you know? It's not like he just signed a bill into law that's going to allow discrimination all over Talibandiana. Right? Sure.
So was it a mistake to sign this law?
Absolutely not. The Religious Freedom Restoration Act was signed into federal law by President Bill Clinton more than 20 years ago.
It's Bill Clinton's fault. Hey, welcome to the 90s. Yeah. This clip's going to take a little while, so you might want to just have a second hockey puck handy and maybe make sure that you're not down more than halfway on your roll of duct tape.
And it lays out a framework for ensuring that a very high level of scrutiny is given any time government action impinges on the religious liberty of any American.
But I think one of the problems that people have pointed out is that in Indiana, your civil rights laws don't include sexual orientation as a protected class. And even some of the supporters of the bill who appeared with you when you signed the bill, Eric Miller of Advance America, wrote that it will protect those who oppose gay marriage. He put up this example. He said, Christian bakers, florists, and photographers should not be punished for refusing to participate in a homosexual marriage. So this is a yes or no question. Is Advance America right when they say a florist in Indiana can now refuse to serve a gay couple without fear of punishment?
Well, let me explain to you the purpose of this bill.
I got a feeling anything, whatever's coming, it ain't an explanation. It might be an evasion. It might be a diversion. It might be, well, hell, he might just start tap dancing, but it's not going to be an explanation.
is to empower and has been for more than 20 years, George. This is not speculative. The purpose of this legislation, which is the law in all 50 states in our federal courts, and it's the law by either statute or court decisions in some 30 other states, is very simply to empower individuals when they believe that actions of government impinge on their constitutional First Amendment freedom of religion. This is not about discrimination. This is about empowering people.
But let me try to pin you down there, though, on it, because your supporters say it would. And so yes or no, if a florist in Indiana refuses to serve a gay couple at their wedding, is that legal now in Indiana?
George, this is where this
debate... This is where an actual judge sitting on a bench would come in handy, because then George Snuffleupagus could say, Your Honor, the witness is being non-responsive, and the judge could say, answer the question, Governor Pence, or I'm gonna stick you in the hoosegow. Sadly, we don't have any judges handy, so Mike Pence, because see, the reason Mike Pence is on there, we gotta understand this, okay? The reason Mike Pence is on there is not so much because he's convinced of the rightness of his position. No. It's because, well, the business community has, him being a Republican governor in Talibandiana and everything, the business community has collectively picked up its phone, and they've got a direct line to him, being as how he's a Republican and they're the business community. They've got a direct line, and they picked it up and said, You dumbass! You're going to break the economy of the entire state of Talibandiana over a bunch of dumbass religious bigots. What were you thinking? I'll go on the Sunday shows and I'll explain that this is no big deal. I mean, it's discrimination against gay people is the law in all 50 states, and we were just a little late to the party, but we're getting it straightened out. Sure. Yeah, as News Ninja Carol notes, it may be time to cue the Our Lady of Perpetual Persecution Holy Choir. Yeah, because, Easter's next Sunday and everything, and, well, all them Christians can just crawl right up there on the tree next to Jeebus and claim that they're being crucified for their faith in him, when, let's do remember, Jesus said absolutely nothing about gay people whatsoever, and yes, gay people did exist back then. Mm-hmm. And insofar as they were horribly treated, yes, you can argue that he would have been on their side because he didn't like for people to be persecuted. And he did that whole turn the other cheek thing. And he tried the love thy neighbor thing and then whoop, up on the tree. Gerald with a question. If it's already federal law, then why do you need a redundant state law? Unless, of course, it's not really federal law and you want to discriminate against people. Now, see? I mean, if this was just a matter of protecting religious liberty, then wouldn't you have expected some of the people whose religious liberty was being protected to be there at the signing ceremony instead of just a bunch of homophobic right-wing evangelicals? Hmm? Yeah. Exactly, Jerry. Onward.
It has gone with misinformation and frankly,
it's just a question, sir. Yes so, or no?
Well, there's been shameless rhetoric about my state and about this law and about its intention all over the internet. People are trying to make it about one particular issue.
Internets. Yeah. Well, one would think so. Yes, says Gerald. Yeah.
And now you're doing that as well,
sir. I'm just.
You're. George Snuffleupagus, you're being an internet. You fagoot.
That was one of your supporters who was talking about the bill right there. It said it would protect a Christian florist who against any kind of punishment.
Okay, first of all, on behalf of the Episcopalians, the Lutherans, the decent Presbyterians, the loving, inclusive Congregationalists, members of the United Churches of Christ, Jesus-believing Unitarians, on behalf of any Christian who doesn't hold to these filthy, bigoted views, I'm going to enter an objection on your behalf to George Snuffleupagus for having referred to these bigots who get their maiden forms in a bunch over doing flower arrangements for a wedding or baking a cake in a for-profit business as Christians. Now, granted, I don't have the right union card to be making this argument, but somebody has to. I mean, I have no interest in Christianity. I had plenty of experience with it, and well, as St. Paul says, when I was a child, I spake as a child, and when I became a man, I put away childish things. I put away Christianity because I realized that it just wasn't for me. But there are people, good people, who continue to practice Christianity as they understand it, and for whom Christianity is no more the bigotry that motivated Talibandiana or several other states, Arkansas being one of them, Georgia Stan being another. More on that in a minute. But see, this is where Christianity runs into trouble. It either is or it isn't Christianity. And if the loving, inclusive Christianity of the Congregationalists, the United Churches of Christ, the Episcopalians, Lutherans, what have you, if that loving, inclusive Christianity is Christianity, then the evangelical fundamentalism of the Baptists and the Methodists and the Pentecostals and the Holiness and the Snake Camp isn't. Conversely, if theirs is, the Episcopals and whatnot ain't. At least by my lights. Somebody got to be right and somebody got to be wrong. But we seem to entertain this cognitive dissonance about what Christianity is and isn't until you wind up with George Snuffleupagus there asserting for all intents and purposes that the inclusiveness of humane Christianity is one-on-one equal to the bigotry and hate of fundamentalist, largely Protestant, occasionally Roman Catholic, sometimes Orthodox Christianity. So, objection noted.
Is that true or not?
George, look, the issue here is, you know, is tolerance a two-way street or not?
You're still not going to answer Mr. Snuffleupagus his question, are you? Is tolerance a two-way street or not? Well, you know what? There's actually a pretty easy answer to this. It is not a two-way street. At least not within the business community. Because if tolerance is a two-way street, then occasionally we're just going to have to tolerate businesses that don't want the Negro sitting at his lunch counter. We're going to have to tolerate businesses that say, oh, no women allowed. We've had that in this country. We're going to have to tolerate businesses that say, Irish need not apply. We're going to have to tolerate businesses that say no hunkies, wetbacks, or dagos may enter this building. Because that is the essential kind of tolerance that Mike Pence is preaching here.
It is the tolerance for bigotry. Now, let's remember, the florists, the bakers, the whatnot, the caterers that we're talking about in this context, these are not eleemosynary institutions. These are profit-making enterprises. Some of them conceivably even engaging in interstate commerce, which obtains special status according to the Constitution. They are in business. They are in the business of some form of public accommodation. And it's kind of an all-or-nothing proposition. Now, if you don't want to be in the profit-making business, go be a bigot somewhere. But as Calvin Coolidge said, the business of America is business. And you either do business or you don't. But business and bigotry under our operative philosophy can't mix. Shouldn't mix. And as I noted on Friday evening, Pig Pickers, or whatever the name of the place was the South Carolina barbecue establishment whose owner said he would close his doors before he would ever let a black man sit and be waited on in his restaurant. That they were free to come to the back door and purchase carry out at the same price, of course, but that they could not sit in his restaurant. How is this not that? The only way this cannot be that is if you are willing to buy into the argument, well, a black man can't do nothing about the color of his skin. That's the way he was born. But that homosexualizing, that's a choice. They just wake up one morning and say, some feller just wakes up one morning and says, I gotta have me a man. But yet they never have to justify, the straight people never have to justify it by way of saying, well, I woke up this morning and decided I wanted to put my penis in some woman's vagina. It can't withstand scrutiny. So, onward, young Snuffleupagus.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of talk about tolerance in this country today having to do with people on the left.
The left, Mike Pence says, are the only people engaging who want tolerance, but we're not willing to tolerate the bigots. But he won't say that part.
Indiana steps forward to protect the constitutional rights and privileges of freedom of religion for people of faith and families of faith in our state. And this avalanche of intolerance that's been poured on our state is just outrageous.
Except it's not. It's not an avalanche of intolerance. It's business, Mike. You're a Republican. You should know a little bit about business. This is the free market. In the second decade of the 21st century, the free market has declared that it doesn't much care for bigotry. And so the free market is free to pick up and leave Talibandiana with nothing but a bunch of godforsaken, idiotic, bigoted, homophobic florists and bakers. And let's see how your economy chugs along on that. The NCAA is headquartered in Indianapolis. All kinds of other businesses in it. Goodbye now. Enjoy the cake. Right? Oh, those are lovely flowers.
Perhaps. Tolerance is a two-way street.
So when you say tolerance is a two-way street, does that mean that Christians who want to refuse service, or people of any other faith who want to refuse service to gays and lesbians, that it's now legal in the state of Indiana? That's a simple yes or no question.
George, the question here is if there is a government action or a law that an individual believes impinges on their religious liberty, they have the opportunity to go to court, just as the Religious Freedom Restoration Act that Bill Clinton's side allowed them.
That's our second Clinton reference. Sure, it has something to write.
go to court, and the court would evaluate the circumstance under the standards articulated in this act. That's all it is. And when you see these headlines about Indiana, a license to discriminate in Indiana, and it just, I'm telling you, George, it is a red herring, and I think it's deeply troubling.
I'm trying to get that same.
It's a red herring? A red herring. He says it's a red herring.
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Me either, because it's not a red herring if it's exactly what the bill does. And indirectly, he admitted, Mike Pence did, that is what the bill does. The florist doesn't want to serve the Homer sectional, and so then goes to court and says, Your Honor, I have a deeply held religious belief that Homer sectional over there who's a-getting married is going to hell, and I can't sell flowers to somebody who's going to hell? And the judge says, well, I'm looking at your Talibandiana Religious Freedom Act, and you're right. Case dismissed. Find another florist. And part of the upshot of this is, if one was a libertarian and a free marketeer, and say that the market will solve all problems, well, it can be self-correcting. You're homophobic, bigoted, florists and bakers and caterers and whatnotters can hang a sign in the window that says, we don't serve the homos. And maybe there's some other florists, and I'll bet they're better florists, frankly, hangs a sign in the window that says, we do serve the homos. There. Problem solved. Except, what happens because we're talking about evangelical fundamentalist Christians, of course. What happens, or maybe, no, Christianists. What happens when they come home from church after a particularly engaging stem-winding sermon by the parson, who has been telling them about how the Jews killed Christ? And so they grab their little sign on the door that says, we don't serve the homos, and then with their little Sharpie, they scrawl, nor Jews. Well, see, then they'll have a problem, because by virtue of it being a protected religious practice, that would be illegal. See? Yeah. Although, to be fair, they'd more likely come back after the stem winder by the parson and write, and no Muslims neither. Which, of course, begs the question, how are you going to know who's gay and who ain't? Well, the reason we talk about florists and bakers is that we're talking about weddings. Now, if let's say a gay man walks into a bigoted florist and he wants to get a big bouquet of peonies for mama's day. Well, there's going to be no way for the bigot to say, wait a minute, are you one of them homos? Before the bigot sells them a bouquet of peonies for Mother's Day. This is specifically, by definition, related to a particular act. And interestingly, it's not a sex act. That's just the grounding of the bigotry itself. It's the wedding. Or, I don't know, eventually people will be, and they already have been, married long enough that one of the spouses will pass on. and there will be a funeral. Now, what kind of shit-eating, miserable... I can't deliver flowers for your gay married funeral. Isn't equality just ever so much simpler? I mean, really? Are we to understand that these florists and these bakers are involved in their crafts because it's some sort of religious calling, or are they in it because they think they're good enough at it to make money at it? And if they're in it because they're good enough to make money at it, then doesn't Vespasian's ancient adage to his sons, Pecunia non odet, obtain here? Not to draw a comparison between those two things, but money is money, which is what Vespasian was getting at, and money is good. Well, that's a Latin motto all by itself, isn't it? Pecunia bona. Money is good. I don't think you even have to put the est in there, do you? Because it's a subject, predicate. It's a predicate nominative. Latin geeks will understand. Anyway, back to the mullah of Talibandiana.
Clarity, and it sounds to me like what you're saying is that someone could use their religious faith as a defense against any kind of a suit brought there. But let's try to get to that clarification you're talking about. One fix that people have talked about is simply adding sexual orientation as a protected class under the state civil rights laws. Will you push for that?
No.
I will not push for that.
Told you.
That's not on my agenda, and that's not been... that's not been an objective of the people of the state of Indiana.
The bigots of the state of Indiana. Oh, Lord, you long for a little bit of that justice dealing out great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky so that we can finally one of these days catch Mike Pence, you know, with a man in his mouth and just have done with this. I credit Bart Kopp for that line. Wherever you are, Bart Kopp, thank you.
And it doesn't have anything to do with this law. I mean, George, well, this isn't about individual rights or preferential rights for anyone. It says that everyone has the right to the highest level of review if they feel that the government has impinged upon their religious liberty.
That gets to the second possible fix.
But I go back again, you know, again, I really believe, George, that it...
Notice the use of the word believe, the single most dangerous word in the English language. Let's see how he pulled the pin on it.
It has been breathtaking to many in Indiana. Me included, at the fact that Indiana joined some 30 other states and all 50 states in our federal courts by enacting the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. We've been doing our level best, George, to correct the gross mischaracterization of this law that has been spread all over the country by many in the media.
Well, let's get back to that.
Some of the media coverage of this has been shameless and reckless, and the online attacks against...
Well, maybe that's because the internet and the media are liberal homos.
It's the people of our state. I'm just not going
to
stand for it.
That may be. We've tried to be responsible as well. But let me try to get to this clarification. One suggested fix to the law would say that this chapter of the law does not establish or eliminate a defense to a claim under any federal, state, or local law protecting civil rights or preventing discrimination. Is that the kind of clarification you're talking about?
George, look.
No. I mean, this is where the for-profit media just get so disgustingly wishy-washy and squishy and icky. Because the real answer to this is for George Snuffleupagus to look at Mike Pence. Mike Pence is not that important. He's just another pissant Republican governor from another pissant Republican state. Look at him and say, at long last, sir, have you no shame? Get off my air, you disgusting, homophobic bigot. And then just cut the feed. That's how you handle it. And then everybody but Fox News, TV, Radio, Rwanda will do the same. Or if they would do the same, this would be solved. Because again, look, it's the free market. I mean, either... damn it, Republicans, either you want one of these or you don't want one of these. Pick one. Because ultimately what we're talking about here, I mean, this kind of legislation is the exact opposite of a free market. They really don't want one, do they? They want free profits, not a free market.
We're not going to change the law, okay? But if the General Assembly in Indiana sends me a bill that adds a section that reiterates and amplifies and clarifies what the law really is and what it has been for the last 20 years, then I'm open to that. But we're not going to change this law.
Final question. Final yes or no question, Governor.
Yeah, give up, George. Just go to fade to black, baby.
Do you think it should be legal in the state of Indiana to discriminate against gays or lesbians?
Well, back to the well again, are we, George?
George,
it's a yes or no question.
Hoosiers don't believe in discrimination.
Oh, no, of course they don't. Unless, you know, it's some florist who wants to deny service to a gay couple getting married or having a funeral or... hey, you know, celebrating the arrival of a new baby, or a birthday, or New Year's, or St. Patrick's Day. Yeah.
I mean, the way I was raised in a small town in southern Indiana is you're kind and caring and respectful to everyone.
As long as they're not gay.
Anybody that's been in Indiana for 5 minutes knows that Hoosier Hospitality is not a slogan, it's a reality. People tell me when I travel around the country.
Yeah, who's your ma? Who's your pa? That's some hospitality.
Gosh, I went to your state and people are so nice. I mean, this is not about discrimination. This is about protecting the religious liberty of every Hoosier, of every faith, and we're going to continue to work our hearts out.
As long as the Hoosier isn't gay or a Muslim, maybe black, possibly Jewish. Because, you know, it's a big enough state. There's people in Talibandiana who hate Jews. There's people in Talibandiana who hate Muslims. Obviously, there's no small amount of people in Talibandiana who hate the LGBTQ community. There's people in Talibandiana who hate atheists. And what this law has done is protect each and every hater in that state. This is a bill that enshrines hatred. It is no small irony, because the goddess doesn't work small, that John Mellencamp is from Indiana and sang those words, "Ain't that America for you and me? Ain't that America, the land of the free, baby?" Oh, yeah, that's right. Thank you, Marty. I left out the Hoosiers who hate people who marry across racial boundaries. Yeah, I'm given the number of Klansmen that Indiana has been the home to over the years, I'm pretty sure there's no small number of them, and they can put a sign in their window, too. I have deeply held Christian beliefs that tell me that I do not have to serve, because even, and in some ways, this is a very subtle, or maybe not so subtle, form of um, nullification. Took me a minute. Because, see, the gay marriage, marriage equality, I don't even like that phrase, gay marriage. Marriage equality is the law. And it has been more or less federally decreed. And so you've got these Confederates, like Mike Pence, who realizes that the only way he's going to get elected or reelected or anything else is by catering to the weirdo, hardcore right wing in his state. And without him, he's nothing. Well, he's going to have to engage in some nullification. So the theory being that if we can just make it plain enough that the homo couples aren't welcome in Talibandiana, maybe they'll go away and leave us the beautiful little white enclave that we know we can be.
To clarify that to the people of Indiana and the people of this great country.
Yes or no? Should it be legal to discriminate against gays and lesbians?
George, you're following the mantra of the last week online, and you're trying to make this issue about something else.
This man, you know, when he dies, they'll have to screw him into the dirt. He's too crooked to bury laying down flat. He can't even say, because again, he needs those bigots to remain a viable politician. He cannot even say of his own personal opinion that it should not be okay to discriminate against someone for being gay. He can't say it. He might as well, George Snuffleupagus might as well have asked him to deny Christ. Because he won't do it. Here's the problem. This is Representative Brian Bosma from Indianapolis, Dan. And he held himself a press conference about the new bigotry law. And where Mike Pence wouldn't say the obvious, this guy will.
It would depend on if you were in a community that had a human rights ordinance, that wouldn't be the case.
But most of the state does not have this, correct?
That's correct.
At this point, have there been any business owners
who you've talked to? The questions from the reporters are not mic'd.
I can answer that. I have talked to several who said, in both cases, they did take the time to read the law. And while they did believe this created the controversy that people were suggesting, they also said it would be most helpful if you could clarify that somehow and take some action to make it clear to everyone that's not what's going on here in Indiana, because they're worried about the perception of our state, as we are. I think it's terribly unfair what's being said about our state. It's a great state, great people. We don't support discrimination against anyone in this state, but unfortunately some people are suggesting that for whatever reason. So this fix has meaning for that reason as well. And hopefully by doing this, we'll put this whole issue to rest.
Yeah, here's the problem. That first question was, in the state of Indiana, if you want to hang up a sign that says, we don't serve gays here, that's legal now, isn't it? And the first guy said, well, and this is the Bosma guy from Indianapolis, if your city has a human rights ordinance, you couldn't do it. Well, here's the entire list of cities in Indiana that have a human rights ordinance. Bloomington, Evansville, Indianapolis, and South Bend. Those are the four communities that have human rights ordinances that state that it's not legal to discriminate against gay people. In the rest of the state of Indiana, you can hang your no homo sign, and this law then protects you. Like it or not, they have, and they, it's not like they didn't know what they were doing. This bill wasn't pushed by some anonymous backbencher from the Talibandiana legislature. Bullshit. This bill was pushed and backed by the bigotry industry of the United States in a state legislature where they knew they could get it through. Now, one of the things that's more interesting out of this, and I realize this has been a bit of a Moran Monday filibuster, please forgive me, but this deserves working through. Because, see, over in Talibandiana, this law, well, the bigotry has already been at work even before the law was passed. Kay Steiger over at Think Progress has the story. And she writes that a person identifying himself as a business owner in Indiana called a radio station, Radio Now 100.9, The Talk, or whatever they call themselves, 100.9 FM. And because the person was anonymous, and because the person wouldn't identify some of, I mean, it, anonymous sources are always questionable, so we have to take that into account. But this person called a radio station to say, yeah, I've discriminated. I feel okay with it because it's my place of business. I pay the rent. I've built it with all my money and my doing. It's my place. I can do whatever I want with it. They can have their lifestyle and do their own thing in their own place or with people that want to be with them. So what he says he has done is that, well, you know, they've come in and they've wanted to sit down, and I knew that they were those LGBT people, and I told them that we just had some broken equipment and that we couldn't serve them because our equipment was broken. And it's always going to be, and see, here's the thing. Anybody with even a passing familiarity with the civil rights struggle of the 50s and 60s and into the 70s knows that that is precisely a tactic that was used by the Christian right-wing bigots of that day. Right. Gerald noting he was too chicken shit to face them with the truth. And, yeah, because he didn't want them going out the door saying, you know, Billy Bob Bubba's chicken shack wouldn't serve us because we're gay. There's other people eating in here, but that's because we just served the last plate of Billy Bob's special Indiana Hoosier fried chicken, because our Billy Bob special Hoosier fried chicken fryer just now broke down. Oh, a terrible explosion back in the kitchen, I tell you. Who's your ma? Who's your pa? Now, it's up to you to decide whether or not you believe this anonymous report. But ask yourself, is this something that an evangelical, does this sound like something that an evangelical fundamentalist Christian would do? Especially in this age of Hobby Lobby, when they are every day being empowered to do so. And yeah, in case you were wondering, presently under consideration in Georgia, Kentucky, Illinois, Arkansas, and 16 other states, Because you see, the right-wing religion industry is tax-free and doesn't bat an eyelash about mixing politics and religion and lobbying, because they know that the IRS will never touch them. Remember that narrow ruling in Hobby Lobby? This comes straight out of that. Getting a little narrow, a little not narrower every day, isn't it? And now the non-discriminatory. Remember, one of the largest gay communities in America is Atlanta, Georgia. Most people think New York, San Francisco. Atlanta's got the rainbow flag flying too. And Georgia, they think that they may have killed it for this legislative session, but it can still be tacked on to another bill. It can be reintroduced in its unamended form. It ain't over. And the last time, for instance, and this is how these followers of the Prince of Peace operate, by the way. Delta Airlines. I mean, Atlanta is two companies just completely intertwined with the city's image of itself. Delta and Coca-Cola. Delta Airlines last year spoke out strongly when this bigotry bill was introduced in the last legislative session. Since then, Representative Earl Earhart, who is a Republican and a bigot, introduced a punishment bill for Delta that would repeal the jet fuel tax exemption for Delta Airlines. Yeah, really. You want to stay? Okay. All right. I mean, you're an airline company. What the hell? A couple of homos getting married got to do with you? You want to stand up for homo marriage? That's fine. We'll take away your jet fuel tax subsidy. Yeah. How you feel about gay marriage now, Bubba? In the name of Jesus, baby. Yeah. We're talking about thugs, pure and simple. Let's go over to the Gizmo line. I suspect we have Jim. Is that you, Jim? Oh, Jim. There you are. Hey. Jim.
Yeah, Bob, I'm sorry. We are error in transition here. Just a second here. Let me cut this speaker down.
All right, thanks.
You know, this thing in Indiana, this governor just passed. That goes beyond all understanding. I mean, what are they going to do? Are they going to go to Peru or Peru, Indiana, and dig up Cole Porter and send him somewhere else?
I wouldn't mention that, because somebody will probably introduce a bill, Jim.
Well, I don't understand this. I really don't. This is beyond any length and breadth of my ability to understand human behavior.
Well, but I think the larger issue, I mean, we're seeing it live on the ground in Taliban, Indiana, but it's the fact that there are 20 states with these laws under consideration in their state legislatures right now.
That is rather frightening. I mean, what, you know, let me ask you this. Maybe this is a rhetorical question. What is the litmus test here to determine if someone is gay or whatever, besides just a wedding or something like that? I mean, talking about forbidding people to come into your restaurant because you might think they're gay.
Well, I mean, that's what this one guy says. He runs a restaurant, and he says that he's told them in the past that they were all out or the equipment was broken or whatever, because, you know, he just didn't want them people in his business, because he worked to build it so hard.
Well, what the hell have they done to him?
Well, they're being all gay. And his God hates gay people. And says that they're not to be tolerated. And the First Amendment protects his hatred. Now, that's how upside down, backwards, sideways this country's become, in that the United States Constitution, the First Amendment thereof, is presently being used by the right wing as a cudgel, as a catalyst, not of expanding freedom, but as a cudgel, a means of enshrining hatred. And that's of course, what Hobby Lobby did. That's what Indiana's doing. That's what these 19 other states are doing.
We have seen constitutional governments being taken over by arcane forces that have allowed them to, you know, execute their whatever they want to execute. And that's what they're doing, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, I just...
It's dreadful.
It is. I mean, this is not simply another one of those social issues that diverts our attention. This is a debate over the fundamental nature of this country, Jim. And it's a debate we seem to keep having to have. Every time the right wing finds somebody new to, you know, we tell them they can't hate this group, so they got to find somebody else to hate. And as was the case in the civil rights era, so it is today, that they're hiding behind the skirts of religion to do it. Their God commands them. You know, it doesn't ask, doesn't say maybe. Their God commands them to be disgusted with gay people.
Well, in their own minds, I guess that's the way they feel, but I don't feel that way, and I don't understand why they do. You know, this is a quick aside here. In my hometown, they had the Carolina Cup. You probably heard about it.
Yeah.
And on Facebook, there were a lot of gay people there. I mean, one guy was wearing pink pants, a pink tie, and a regular navy blazer. And he's well known.
Well, let's be careful there, Jim, because some of us look good in pink.
Well, I mean, you know, here's the thing. I mean, thank you. Well, either it's pink or what I call pank.
All right. For the Southerners in the audience and for those who aren't, let's make clear. There's pink and there's pank.
Exactly. But these were pank. And I said, well, go for it, girl. And, you know, nobody objected. And one of the major caterers there is openly gay. And nobody had any problem with him there. He all just got accolades on number one. They had a tent that was decorated by the guy who wore the pink trousers. And, of course, the other guy is a marvelous restaurateur and caterer. Good friends of my family. Facebook friend of mine. Known him for a long time.
And to be fair, Jim, I'm looking at some photographs here of the Carolina Cup. And on the one hand, I got a guy standing here in a pink shirt and teal pants with a coordinating teal bow tie. But then again, and I got to say this, and I may get some hell for this, but I'm looking at how the women dress for this thing, and they look like drag queens.
Well, Bob, what can I say? I mean, you know, it was kind of chilly for this year for the cup, and
well, I can tell.
And people are. They are dressed in hats and stuff like that. It's nothing but a fashion show and a cocktail party. That's basically.
And it sounds like a good time was had by all.
Oh, I've been to it many, many times. And, you know, my only concern was not for how people dressed, but for the care of animals running that steeplechase. Or not steeplechase, but that particular race.
Well, I think it is a steeplechase, isn't it?
I think so. I remember one time they had to destroy one animal they had to destroy him. And it was just dreadful. But nonetheless, I have good times, lots of good food, lots of liquor, lots of people being crazy and stuff like that, dressing crazy. But it's just an opportunity.
But you raise an important point here, Jim. And that is that, obviously, it makes no difference the sexual orientation of the caterer for the Carolina Cup. As long as the Planters punch is right punchy, and as long as the cake is good and the cookies are wonderful, and the barbecue and the shrimp and grits is laid, as long as that's all good, that's all that matters, right? But nobody's getting married at the Carolina Cup, and this is where the problem arises, because this isn't about gay people. As crazy as it may sound, this is about the right wing's weirdo objection to gay people having the same constitutional rights as straight couples. And understanding it that way, we can see that it is a direct analog to the civil rights struggle.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, pursuant to what you just said about marriage and stuff like that, I've always was brought up and always believed in just a simple phrase, as long as it's love, the Lord don't mind. You know, that's basically how I look at it. Maybe I'm being overly simplistic, but maybe I'm stupid. Maybe I'm just naive, but, you know, I mean, who am I to point fingers at anybody's sexual orientation? I mean, you and I have been over, I've said some stuff on this program, where my bread's buttered.
Yeah.
And I can certainly understand this. And let me tell you something, in earlier times, I had to fought some hard battles, and sometimes had to just button my lips to the point that my lips bled when hearing other people saying all kinds of terrible things about gay people, this, that, and the other, and it took a considerable degree of self-restraint just to get up from my desk and take my fist and plant it in that son of a bitch's mouth.
I have no doubt.
And the one who always would talk about how he had been accosted by this, that, and the other, by gay people, was the most unattractive, fat, bald, ugly, not only ugly in appearance, but also...
ugly in spirit.
Exactly. I mean... who in the hell will want to go to bed with him?
You see, I think there's a whole... there's a river of latency that flows as a subcurrent under all this.
And, you know, I told this guy, I said, I don't think those gay people would suck your nasty dick if they were drowning and you had oxygen in your balls.
Don't hold back, Jim.
Was I?
No, I don't think you were. But, my God, that was almost a giggle. A whole bunch of the world, the so-called developed world, looks at us and says, really? This is what's consuming your time? You're hopeless. It really is what consumes our time, and we have real problems in this country, and we're still fighting the rights battles, and apparently it's like some sort of trench warfare where the right wing falls back from one trench into another, and okay, you won't let us discriminate against black people, okay, how about women? No, women, okay, gay, there's a black trench and a women trench. And a Muslim trench, and a Jew trench, and a gay trench, and God, there's no end to their. Sooner or later, Jim, they gotta run out of people to discriminate against, don't they?
Oh, I don't know, Bob. They'll find something. They always manage to find somebody or some bizarre interpretation to ensconce their own stupid and hateful. And that's what it is. This is just hateful, as far as I'm concerned. I was reading in the Washington Post, yesterday. I understand even in Japan, gay people have a very hard time.
Oh, I don't doubt it. Cultures with strong patriarchies generally do.
Well, I mean, we're not the only nation in the world that's causing a lot of problems and wanting to probably in their head put pink triangles on people. I don't know. But it would appear that way to me.
I mean, I admit that was one of the first things that came to mind for me, too.
I mean, we're going back into history here, and I hope people can learn.
I mean, one of the best ways, Jim, to prove the evil viciousness of this law is one, and this is kind of a coordinated campaign, and you got to put this thing to the test. So I would imagine the gay community and its allies have enough people to identify some of these bigots, because it ought to be easy enough to find out, because they're really kind of loud and proud about it.
And so, they have a lot of discretionary income.
So what you do is you walk in and I hate to put it in such otherwise sad terms, but I think it would be beneficial. Somebody walks in and says, I need a spray of flowers for a funeral. My mother has passed on. And then, we're so sorry. You know how they act in a time of grief. And you get up there to the tipping point where you've got the plastic out and you hand it over and you go, here's my credit card. I'm gay.
Huh. And what are they going to do? Are they going to make pink credit cards now?
Well, no. That's not my point.
But the
money's in hand.
Oh, yeah.
And they've already expressed, oh, we're so sorry for your loss. Oh, that's terrible. Oh, we can make something that'll be a perfect expression of sentiment. Blah, 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 blah. Here's the money. I'm gay. And then see what they do. Because remember, the only way this works is if you previously identified this florist as being a homophobic florist.
Well, I don't think a lot of them objected to flowers and stuff like that during the AIDS epidemic, you know?
Right, they want this law. Let's make them live with it. And then let the free market take over, and you just say, okay, they just refused to sell me a spray of flowers for a casket. And tell the world, and pretty soon they're out of business. And you know what? The government didn't put them out of business. The market did, Jim.
They put themselves out of business.
Exactly. And by the way, and I'm gonna say something here, and I don't want it to be taken the wrong way. But I'm amazed to know how many bigoted Christian right-wing florists there are.
Really?
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it seems they would be in the business of aesthetics and floral design and things of that nature. At least they could have some type of link to people who are of similar ilk, if you know what I mean, who are very much into aesthetics and
I mean, there are all kinds. Yeah, there are all kinds of ridiculous extensions on this. What if they don't hang a sign that says no gays, but what if they do hang a sign saying proudly serving the Bible believing upstanding traditional God fearing family marriage community?
Well, let them put that on Madison Avenue and see where it goes.
Well, I realize it's kind of a mouthful,
let them put that on Madison Avenue. And, you know, advice they give to people who are in the business of selling products and things of that nature. I mean, you know,
my larger point is...
Everybody is green.
Yeah, pecunia non odet. I mean, you know that story. But, you know, the reason I mention all that is because frankly, the free market will, you know, I know the libertarians say the free market will solve all problems, but sometimes it won't. Because the free market cannot address issues of essential hatred.
No, it can't.
Only we, the people, trying to form that more perfect union can do that. And you know what? When you're enshrining bigotry in law, you're not making a more perfect union. You are, by God, making a less perfect one. Jim, don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely, I do. Absolutely, because that's not what it's about. And it's a very sad state of affairs when you have this stuff going on. I mean, don't people have other things in their lives that are more important to them than trying to make somebody else's life more miserable or less acceptable? That's the question I ask. I mean, you know, is that all you have to do? But I guess maybe that's all they have to do. I don't know. But anyway, I just wanted to share that.
Well, thank you. Thank you for giving me a reason to go and look at the photographs from the Carolina Cup, Jim.
Oh, yeah. Like I say, it's just a lot of fun. Big fan.
Well, I bet it was warm. It might have been cooler down there for there, but I bet it was warmer than it is here. I bet it was warmer than it was here.
Oh yeah. Normally, I mean, the Carolina Cup, I can remember in days back, and you probably don't remember this, but, you know, that fabric from India named Madras or Madras.
Oh yeah. Oh no, I love Madras.
And of course, you know, they would, I think one year the style was for the guys to wear white duck trousers and a Madras, jacket. Well.
I had me one of them once.
It rained white that day.
Oh shit.
And they really figured out about this Madras. And my grandmother used to tell me, she said, I can't understand why these people are so wild about Madras or Madras. It's because when they say it bleeds, it fades, and it runs on anything you've got on.
Oh, first two or three times you own Madras pants or Madras shirt, you got to wash it by itself because the colors don't set. Cold salt. I was always told cold salt water. But
and that's basically it, and that even doesn't.
Oh my God! When it rained on all them people festooned in all their Madras, my goodness gracious! It must have looked like a terrible LSD hallucination.
It sure did.
People melting all over creation.
Yeah, I thought it was real funny. But anyway, so.
But I had a Madras jacket done up in greens and yellows and gold and black. I remember that one. I had a Madras shirt that I bought at Britches of Georgetown in the mall in Atlanta, and I wore that thing until it absolutely fell apart. One of the most comfortable shirts I ever owned. But yeah, the first two or three washings, it ran. I mean, it ran like a horse race.
Or it bled. That's what that was the selling term on it.
Yeah, it bled. That's right.
Yeah, had bled, you know, and everybody thought, wow, what is this going to be? And you know, eventually you would have, it's rather cheap fabric, and it's not anything special as far as the...
Oh, but it's cool. It's cool.
Well, you know, it depends on, you know, settler mode, the style.
Well, I don't mean as in hip. I mean, it's a very light, breezy fabric.
It is, absolutely, absolutely. And it comes from Madras, India.
Well, exactly, and I mean it's made for a certain climate.
Exactly.
But it's hell in the rainy season there too.
Well, listen, I'm gonna let you go. I'm still here nursing sick kitty.
Is he getting any better?
Bob, it's one step forward, two steps back.
Oh, I imagine you've had several vet visits, and that's never easy.
He was in the vet for 10 days with a shunt in his leg.
Oh, mercy.
And so the only other thing would be to ascertain the brain tumor. And if that's the case, the treatment would render him completely.
Yeah.
And you know what that is, because, you know, it's, and I'm not trying to take your time up here.
That's okay, that's okay.
I'm looking at him right now. He's got part of his foreleg shaved where they had the IV in and stuff like that. And when people, as bad as it is for people to undergo treatments and stuff like that, for them, they don't know why. They don't understand. And all they can do is look at you with those beautiful eyes and just trust you.
Well, I have no doubt that Rupert does trust you. And I hope the outcome...
It's an awesome responsibility. And I was so happy to hear if one of your callers was able to find a puppy. And I wish them all the very best with that puppy.
And I think we're into the second week of the puppy countdown, so... We're all anxious for the homecoming, but I think we all would like to know that you have a good outcome for Mr. Rupert.
Well, listen, okay, thank you very much, and I'll let you go. And I know there are other people who want to talk, but please pay attention to that email I sent you in the Middle East. I mean, that's just really getting pregnant.
Well, and it is, but Jim, and I'm not trying to keep you on, but Jim, I don't see. I think we're fasting approaching a point where there is no good way out.
I'm afraid you're right. You can only go so far.
And then every alternative is stupid and bloody.
Yeah, and stupidity does have a habit of getting its way. Okay, let me let somebody else talk.
All right, Jim, you have a good evening. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from not too far from here. He's been, and many of you are familiar with Rupert, and he has been not at all well for quite some time, and Jim is pouring heart and soul into being the best caregiver that he can. And there is a special responsibility in that regard. It is 4 minutes before the hour. The Gizmo line is open. We call that Maud. 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. Going over to the Herald line in a moment, otherwise known as the Skype line. Just want to note that we've got a wonderful, wonderful room full of folks for Moran Monday. And just offer up a quick howdy to Blake in Madison. And of course, News Ninja Carol Baker and Carol Abel in Australia. Chatroom Jesus is with us this evening. As is Dwayne in Kentucky. Gerald is with us, Jug of Punch. Thank you, Jug of Punch, for kicking in. He took us down to only $50 to go this evening. Good evening to Kelly and Man and Mr. Gibson. Mighty Mouse is with us. Ralps is with us. Roger from Northern California is with us. Sentient Beings with us. Sparky is with us in his third stage Guild Navigator mode. He is both Sparky and Man Cave. As he goes back and forth. Stockton Larry, good evening. Good evening, Texas T, and good evening, Will from Chicago. Let's go over to the Skype line, also known as Harold. And I suspect, is this John?
Yeah, how are you hearing me?
I got you dandy.
Yeah, because I'm in the middle of Colorado, and although I've got 4G and all kinds of stuff, I've been noticing when Jim was talking, it kind of spitter-spattered, so if it does, I'll...
So far, you're golden.
Okay. Well, a couple small comments about the conversation tonight. Talked to a young lady at breakfast this morning, and she said something that, as the old saying goes, out of the mouth of babes. In this case, literally. Damn, she's going to...
Okay, I was about to be a thank you for saving me the trouble. Swing!
But, yeah.
Sorry.
Who's talking to? Another of Roseanne's less worthy efforts. But, she said something. She says, if you've had privilege for so long, when you lose it, you can feel like you're being persecuted. And that just encapsulates these sons of bitches. Almost like no way else you could say it.
And you just ran into this person randomly out on the road.
Yeah, that's my curse. Yeah, she was slinging hash and slinging wisdom, and she got a larger tip than usual because of it. But I was impressed. And but it encapsulated, because like I said, I mean, over the weekend, I mean, you got this guy Pence, he signs a stupid bill, and then you've got the college, the NCAA started screaming and hollering, and well, we may have to look at about future venues and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, oh my God. And then of course, late last week, there was some rumblings about he's thinking about running for president. So now
he has such presidential hair. I mean, he has some quality presidential hair.
Yeah, he's got the rig and plastic stuff going on.
I mean, he's got helmet hair that rivals that of Brian Fisher, proud son of Stanford at the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi. And I don't know if you caught it, but Carol Baker just pointed out to me a little bit ago, it's worth looking for on YouTube, 11 minutes of Keith Olbermann just delivering a full broadside demanding that the NCAA move everything, and I mean everything, out of Indiana, because historically sports has led the way on civil rights issues. And you know what? I think that would be just fine. I mean, why not teach these bigoted bastards a lesson?
Oh, now, of course, this assumes that Oldman doesn't have to go on another 2 or 3 week vacation for doing that. But,
No, see, that's the thing. They won't make him take the vacation for this. I don't think.
When you sit there and it's like the guy you were talking about, you know, these old white Confederate jackasses, as I guess I can't be.
Well, you're being about as charitable as it's possible to be.
Their world is changing. You know, the internet and the flow of people and the view of the world. It used to be back in the 50s, you had 3-4 channels. And you had maybe an hour's worth of news a night to give you a window into the rest of the world. And it was very filtered. Now you can jump on Google, you can jump on anything, you can, you know, help. And what's the sad thing about it is I get most of my news from BBC, which is a sad thing to find out. To get the actual news of your own country, you have to go to a foreign country's website to find it. It's ridiculous. And this guy, he signed this bill, and then all the fire starts hitting him, and now he starts jumping around trying to wrap himself in the... Because what he's doing is he's trying to wrap himself in the, well, you know, the anti-government thing. Well, we're trying to limit the capacity of government to interfere with your religious rights. Well, what he's saying, in a nutshell, is he's trying to keep the government from defending the rights of other people.
Right.
That's exactly what he's doing.
And there's nothing new about this argument whatsoever. I frankly think it would be downright refreshing if he would simply say, listen, I'm a Republican, we are a party of bigotry, we're a party of fear, we're a very white party, and I am playing to the people, I'm doing what the people who voted for me to do.
Yep.
Now the ultimate irony is that a few years back when he was a rising star in the Dim Leader administration, because he was, you might recall that he said, he doesn't have time for these divisive social issues or something equally stupid. Well, yes, he did.
Yeah, all right. Let me pick up my pile of poop that my cat left here. Yeah, okay, whatever.
Right.
These guys, they're just... Yeah, and what's, I guess, the scariest thing about it is that, you know, in his own mind, he believes it. Oh, it has nothing to do with bigotry. It has nothing. It's freedom, religion. You know.
Well, if you go back to the history of the First Amendment, what you'll find is that all the framers of the Constitution seem to be under a general agreement, John, that religion was a personal thing. You know, James Madison said it made no sense for government to pay for religion or for religion to pay for government or something along those lines. But instead that, you know, religion was something to be practiced in the heart and in the church and that government should not interfere with it. And that as long as government was not all religioned up, all religions had a fair chance, because even back then, when it was a hugely majority Christian-dominated country, the wars, I mean, think about it, 1787, you're not that far removed in time from a time when people were knocking down doors and saying, "Are you Catholic? Come with us." Or knocking down doors and saying, "Are you Protestant? Come with us." I mean, the Catholic assault on the Protestants in France, Lord God knows the way that Elizabeth responded to the Catholics in England. And all of that was far fresher in the minds of the framers then than it is for us now. We've had it bad enough. I mean, the Klan have traditionally been equal opportunity haters, John. You know, if you weren't white Protestant, you were fair game. And so, and that's Jewish, Muslim, Catholic, on and on and on. And the concept of no Irish need apply that obtained in the Northeast and other parts of this country for quite some time had its roots in religious bigotry. So we've seen a taste of it, but not to the extent that the bloodbath that Europe put itself through. And the thing these fools don't seem to understand is they're headed in that direction too. Because if they can manage to oppress everybody who isn't them, sooner or later they're going to start having doctrinal differences amongst themselves, and then they'll turn on each other.
Well, you know that I've said this before. You know, Christianity and Islam, and to a lesser extent Judaism, particularly in the Western world, I don't have a lot of experience in the Eastern world, but I've always considered religion radioactive. A religious person by themselves doing their thing, not a problem. But you get more than a few of them together, and it's like an energy starts building. And then once they get a taste of power, they go radioactive. The minute that they are able, and this is something that has always been, and I know there's really no way to stop it, but it's always been touchy about the concepts of religion and political activity. Because, yes, we have, you know, churches are not supposed to be doing a lot of politicking. Well, you know, finagle the language a little bit, don't say specific names, and you can skate by most of that stuff. The right wing has lived off that for years and years and years and years.
You're right.
Sucking up and playing the politics. And their power comes from that radioactive core. But the world's changing. I saw some statistics today that, like, the Catholic Church has lost, just in the last 20 years, has lost over 40% of its memberships.
And the same kind of numbers are being found in the Southern Baptist. So let's not think that it's something that is endemic to Roman Catholicism.
It's across the board.
I mean, it was kind of a watershed moment, John, when that last Pew survey on religion and American life was released, and fully 20% of America said no, thank you.
Yeah.
And that's 20% of Americans who are Catholic, Protestant, Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, you know, all those traditions, who have simply said, thanks, don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah. And one of the key elements of that 20% is that almost to a very high percentage, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but they're mostly younger people.
Yeah.
And so you can see this is the beginning of a transition. And, you know, driving the truck, traveling the countryside, I deal with, and I travel a lot in the southern states. And if you talk to them carefully, and you coach your language carefully, and if you try not to, you know, take a Brillo pad and rub their skin with it, and you get them talking, you can see it in their eyes. You can see the fear. You hear, I heard that I was talking to a lady back over the weekend down in Texas. You know, this truck stops a lot of times have, you know, the food's pretty good and a lot of the locals show up. And especially since, you know, a lot of the truck stops have like the, you know, the Christian chapels and stuff like that. And they'll like to come in and eat and they'll do the talking. And sometimes you can get in on the conversation. And if you're really careful, and again, you know, if I'm in a good mood and I, you know, forgot to bring my Brillo pad, you get into a conversation with them. And if you look at their eyes and you look at their language, you start to see the fear. The world is changing on them, and they don't like it.
And they damn well can't like cope.
They can't cope. To paraphrase a conversation I had with this old lady over the weekend. And I'm going to be nice, and I'm going to say I truly believe she's not being mean. But we got into a conversation because her daughter was getting married in a week or two. She's getting married. I'm like, oh, congratulations. And she's, yeah, it's a good thing. I'm like, you don't sound all that excited. And she goes, well, his name is Jose.
Oh, God, I thought she was going to say, well, she's marrying a woman, you know.
No, I don't think it didn't go quite that far, I don't think. But I'm like, and she's like, well, I just don't know. And you, of course, you couldn't pressure that hard, but you could see it in her eyes, you could hear it in her voice. She's starting to resign herself to the fact that the world, you know, her daughter's going to go marry one of those people. But her daughter seems to be maybe happy. So there's that, you know, that parental wanting the child to be happy, and then but it's going against everything that this old woman was raised with. Her mind view is getting blown out of the water because. Yeah, like I said, you travel down Texas. It's the funniest thing. I'm not 100% comfortable with it. You go to places where now you have billboard signs on the side of the highway that are just written in Spanish. And it's like,
well, I understand what you're saying because suddenly it doesn't feel, it feels like you're, the ground is shifting a little bit underneath you. And you know what, John? Mm-hmm. Whether you're you or me or anybody else, that ground is shifting.
It is.
And
it's like the whole...
The future is rushing forward.
Yeah, and it's like the whole gay, lesbian thing and stuff like that. I went to a class once in anthropology, and I was remarked, and as you were talking, I got to thinking about that. There used to be... And maybe in some older parts of the world it still is. But there's always this big thing about blood. Even Christianity is just awash with it. You know, the blood of Jesus and the whole chastity belt, just you don't know who the kid is if you don't, you know, is it my kid? I don't know. Well, we slapped an iron pair of drawers on her for, you know, so we know she didn't have sex and you got back. Okay, great. But this is the modern world. Blood, bloodlines, all that stuff doesn't matter as much anymore. But it does matter to these old religious people. They still think in those old ancient terms.
Yeah, well, and those ancient terms of blood, you know, some of that stuff that was invented by, well, if not invented, then propagated by, for instance, the Spanish in the conquest of Mexico. And it was the Spanish who invented the concept of octoroons and quartroons, and you know, and those are all measurements of how much of a sort of blood one has, and by way of being nerdy, I'll point out that there's a biblical verse somewhere in the Pauline letters, or maybe it's in Acts or something. Where it says the whole of humanity is of one blood. And when a man named, I can't remember, the founder of Berea College in Kentucky founded it as coeducational and multiracial. This was before the Civil War. He was shut down. And the motto of that college is that particular Bible verse. The whole of humanity is of one blood.
Yeah, I remember my old aunt that I have in my adopted family. And she's one of them old people you just love to sit, listen to her talk, because she'd give you a little, it's like listening to her talk, you get a little window into the past. And, you know, if she was talking about somebody that she knew, oh, yeah, yeah, I remember later, that little mulatto girl.
There you go.
It's like, and I'm going, and for, you know, for a minute, I'm like, again, you get that little tiny window into the past and the way they thought, because she wasn't being mean. That was their mindset. You know, they's was them's and we's is we's. And we don't mix the two together because whatever. But like I said, that, you know, that, that saying of that woman, the breakfast was, it encapsulated everything. These people, they've lived, and especially in the South, when they had an entire race of people that they could just boss around. No matter how shitty your life is, you always had that little black boy down the street you could
shit on.
You could look down on. Yeah, well, I'm trying to edit a little bit there, but yeah, you're right.
Well, I mean,
your life wasn't so bad if you could look at his and say, well, damn, I'm not him.
Yeah.
But now, if you have to give them all the same benefits you got, then you're not special anymore. Now, as you say, you're seed of the life now. There's nobody else that you could pass it on to without getting in trouble. And their world changed, and they don't like it. And it was a pretty interesting discussion today on one of the radio shows I listened to. I mean, they were having a knockdown, drag-out argument, these two guys were, because one guy was saying, well, you know, in about 15 years or so, you'll get all these, you know, these old white crackers and shit will die off, and then we'll hopefully get a better world. And his opponent was like, yeah, but what about all the damn young white crackers that are coming up? Christ in there.
Yeah, no, a lot of people used to sit around and think that, that you know, the grave would cure some of these ills. But I've given up on that idea. It's like dividing fractions. You know, you divide them and you divide them, but you can never get to zero by dividing.
Well, I got in trouble about 12 years ago on one of the panels I sat on. And, oh man, I had scorched skin, but it was over with because I dared to stand in the position because. One lady, we were having a discussion about poverty and homelessness, stuff like that. And we had a few people in from the quote-unquote religious community were, you know, semi-sponsors, but also semi-recipients of money and things like that. And I forget exactly the reason why the argument started, but she made the comment that we need to respect their religious beliefs. And I was having a bad day that day. I guess maybe I just lost my freaking mind because I turned to her and I said, no, we don't. And she was like, her eyes popped open. She said, what do you mean? And I said, if anybody walked in here, sat down in a green suit with a green bowler hat and a green freaking clover leaf lapel on his pen and said that we need to take and provide the benefits to the leprechauns, we'd laugh and throw his ass out the damn door. But somebody comes in here and says that we got to make some accommodation for somebody who believes in some, you know, winged fairy guy that's going to sprinkle dust on you for being a good person. And we have got to bend over backwards, change society, undo laws because of their beliefs. There ought to be, if I was in a momentary state, I have always said, and maybe I'm doing my rant here, but I've always said they would never want me to be emperor of the country. Because they would be some sad son of a bitches. Because they would lose their charitable statuses, they would lose their churches. Because as far as I'm concerned, no, you don't have the right to believe what you want. If you're in your house like the Founding Fathers says and you want to believe in leprechauns, magic unicorns, or fairy dust, have at it. But the minute you step out with those beliefs and you go into a voting booth, then your beliefs become my problem.
Well, and it's okay to vote. It's even okay to vote them. The thing is, they don't. There is such an essential disconnect, John, because they don't understand that they are putting their faith at risk by their own actions.
Mm-hmm. This is a little sore subject for me, but a truck driver died this weekend. And as far as I'm concerned, it's directly caused because of this religious horseshit and this Republican starve the beast and not pay for things. The bridge, I forget exactly when I was in the traffic jam around it and saw the truck and everything, and then read later on in the paper what exactly, you know, on the web what happened. But a damn, they were trying to repair a bridge, and a piece of it fell on a damn truck.
Oh, Jesus.
Killed the guy. And they're, of course, doing all this trying to blame here, there, and everywhere. But I'm saying, no. It's the goddamn mindset that these people, oh, we need to repair a bridge, but we got to keep commerce moving. We got to keep the money flowing. We got to do this. We can't just shut the goddamn highway down while they fix
the bridge.
You know, while they fix the damn bridge or route people around it or something. No. We can't do that because that would interrupt the flow of commerce and business and people get all upset. So now some poor guy's got, you know, of course some poor guy's dead and his family, you know, however their relationship is set up. And it's like there's...
And, you know, oddly enough, John, we don't put died for capitalism on tombstones.
No, we don't.
But the fact of the matter is, there's 100,000 people dead in Appalachia over the last 100 years, and that's the only thing that really makes any sense to put on their tombstone. Died for capitalism.
Yeah. That's just the way it is. I sit there, without going into detail, I'm pulling a load right now that is at the limit of legality. Because I've got one of the new trucks, it's got all the anti-pollution stuff on, it's got the regens and all this stuff, all designed so that it doesn't pollute, doesn't poison the air as much. And the guy's like, you know, and he's bitching at me, oh, well, you know, you need to be able to carry this weight. I'm like, dude, I've got a truck that's designed. He says, I don't care. Go get an older truck, man. We can't be, you know, cutting loads. You know, we need to make, you know, we've got to make a certain amount of money on these loads. And I'm like, I'm driving this truck. My company's got into this truck so you can breathe better fucking air. But you don't care about that. No, I don't. And, of course, the argument got worse from that point. Because they don't care. They worship fucking money. Your guy Pence signing that freaking bill. He's not, I would almost be, you know, maybe I'm being nice, but this guy, if you actually caught him outside of office, retired, on his own thing, he'd probably tell you flat out, I didn't like that damn bill, but you said it yourself. He's catering to a bunch of scared bigots who are trying to hold back the passage of time, and that's his constituency. Because progressive people won't vote for his ass. He's in a damn state that it still believes in that.
Yeah, but when you get him in it, John, go and look what his margin of victory was.
My company's out of Indiana, but I don't pay much attention to Indiana politics, so, you know, I have no idea.
I will never forget a few years ago, and of course you've probably done this far more than I. But I will never forget driving across from Ohio into Indiana, and the first thing I saw was a great big fetus billboard.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you need
to
know.
Yeah, I get a kick out of all. Oh, yeah, I get a kick out of it all through the damn South. I swear, I have a walking doctorate in fetus embryology science the whole nine yards just by driving down the damn road, because every 10, 15 miles, I know that the fetus has fingertips, and the fetus has fingerprints, and the fetus could hear music, and the fetus knew my mama's voice.
And infinite fetuses with infinite typewriters, and one of them's going to write Hamlet, and
and here's the thing. You know, these old-fashioned-ass people don't want to bring back the fact that for, you know, hell, I'll be polite and say 50,000 years, if not longer, the human race practiced. If that child was, if that woman got knocked up and had a child and they couldn't afford to feed it, that child ended up being left at the base of a damn tree someplace in the middle of winter and froze to death because they had to keep the ones they had alive, not the ones they couldn't feed.
And meanwhile, I just got a note in from News Ninja Carol Baker, who says the Republican mayor of Indianapolis just signed an executive order making the LGBTQ community a protected class in Indianapolis. And she notes, there's a guy who understands that the business of America is business. And by the way, she also notes the alternative rock band Wilco just canceled all of their tour dates in Indiana.
Well, yeah, that's how this is.
And the thing is, this is easy. This is easy.
Yeah.
The minute this thing was signed into law, a major IT player said, "Well, we're pulling out."
Yep. Safeco or Softco or something like that, or Silco.
I can't remember, but I mean, his tweets were well publicized, and you know, and why not?
Oh yeah. You know, they call themselves a right-to-work state because that's the way they write their fucking bills. You know, if you want to know what a Republican bill is, read the name of it and then just reverse it.
Right. Healthy forests, that means cut down all the trees. Clear skies, that means burn more coal.
Yeah. Oh, did you catch the report that was a part of it was over the weekend, but a lot of it was last week that coal production has dropped like kaboom.
I did, and in fact, I was having a conversation about it this weekend, John, and I'm a little worried about those things, because I don't think that they necessarily reflect the larger reality. Because the fact of the matter is, there's still an export market from hell.
Oh, that I understand, but I'm just saying as far as domestically goes, and I see this all the time, you know, and I run around Texas a lot, and I'm running into a lot of these guys who, in fact, yesterday was talking to one of the pipe trucks that moves pipe around all that stuff, and they laid him off for 4 weeks, and then they brought him back because apparently even though the fuel prices are dropping, and he said flat out, he was told that four or five of the major power producers in the western states have not already completed, but are in the process of finishing the transition to natural gas and what have you. And he says, so that's helped get me my job back. So maybe it's anecdotal, but. Hell, if he's getting rehired, then you know that might be it's a single drop in the bucket. But you know, the coal industry, if they end up most of what they got is just export, then you know maybe it's a good sign.
Well, it may be.
I will forego my comments about Iran. That would be just mean of me. So I'll let you go.
All right, John, you have a good evening and drive safe.
Tonight I'm not driving at all. Thank you much.
Well, that's you can't be expected to do that 24 hours a day.
Yeah, if they had their way about it, it would be.
Why, robot truck. Yeah, why do you hate America?
Why doesn't Obama leave, goddammit?
But by the way, speaking of robot truck, I don't know if you saw the same thing I did, but I saw a video of a prototype Mercedes-Benz tractor trailer online this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's entirely radar robot operated. And the way the video played out is it showed the driver gets in, starts the truck, maneuvers it out onto the road, turns on the HAL 9000 and goes and has a sandwich.
Yep. That's, I've argued this so many times with so many people, and they argue about why the economy doesn't work, blah, blah, blah. I said, your biggest problem is banking, financing, and technology. I mean, it's like Walmart. Oh, man, I chewed that Walmart manager's butt. I almost felt bad after I finished because he had this look on his face like, damn, I got whipped and I got ripped hard. Because I tore him a new one because Walmart got like 40 damn cash register lanes. And they got that one section that has all this self-checkout. And they got this girl trying to go over. And she said, come on over and do the self-checkout. It's the easiest car, blah, blah, blah. And I'm a mean person. If I'm going to go spend money in your business, I expect the convenience of being able to walk up and somebody else do the damn swipey stuff.
Right.
So I go up and I'm looking at, again, 30 freaking pictures. They got one hand open and two in the other when you watch you buy. And then they got like all these self-checkout things. And so I only had like 3 items. So I went to the 20 items or less and it's lined out the damn door because a bunch of people like me are getting a couple 3 items and they want to leave, but they only got one person running, one person on register. So when I got through, I went and found the damn manager. And I asked, I said, what the hell is wrong with you people? He goes, what do you mean? I said, when Walmart was coming up, they used to have a policy that if there was more than 3 people in a line, they'd open another register. Now, you get more than 3 people in line, you got somebody over there shuffling over these other lines trying to get people to go check out through the little self-checkout. What, you just want us to come in here and do your work for you? And I, like I said, I don't even remember all I said to him. I just was kind of mean to him.
Go John, go.
And he was like, well, and he finally fessed up. He goes, well, we got a directive from corporate that we have to try to, reduce labor costs and because of minimum wages.
No. See, that's, okay. Yeah, so, John, he was lying to you. He was lying to you.
Oh.
Let me explain what it was he got from corporate. He's a manager at Walmart, okay? That means his year-end bonus comes directly out of the money that he is deemed to have saved the company. So if he can cut hours, and some of those are maybe cashier hours, that means it's better for him at Christmas. The directive the directive he got from corporate was, remember, dumbass, if you want a big bonus, don't spend a lot of money on labor.
Yeah. Because I remember back when I was young and stupid and had hair and all that stuff, I did jobs in customer service and retail and phones and things like that. And they used to tell me back when I was trained, that phone rings, you answer it, And I'm like, well, if it doesn't ring, he says, fine, sit there and file your damn nails or something. But when that customer calls, you be answering. All right, fine, that's customer service.
That's easy enough.
Now it's completely acceptable to have some computer go, leave your name and you'll be left in queue for a callback that is proper number, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I remember an old manager back when I was a kid being trained for my first job who would have shit a brick. What? Customer calls to want to spend money with you and you go put them on hold? Holy shit. He would have lost his mind.
Exactly.
But the new world, baby, new world. It's profit comes from inconveniencing your customers, from lying to them. You got an entire news service that no longer does news. It's all entertainment. Fox News does what it does, not because they know what they're doing.
Don't forget Prison Porn Weekends on the other network.
God. Well, of course, I don't know if you read it or not, but MSNBC is getting ready to do a massive crash and burn.
That's what they keep saying. I'm interested to see how it plays out. Of course, as Charlie Pierce refers to him, squinting the meat puppet will not be touched.
Well, no, because that's, I guess the old people are the only ones who still have money to be extracted, so we got to advertise to them.
The reason squinting the meat puppet won't be touched is because, as compared to all the other morning shows, that's the morning show that Inside the Beltway DC watches.
Mm.
The power broker.
Yeah. I guess that makes them relevant or something. I'll tell you.
All right.
Can we just catch you later?
All right. Take care, John. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
out on the road. Did he say Colorado? Our buddy John, who always brings a lot of good conversation to the table. I'm going back to the phones in just a moment. Harold, otherwise known as the Skype line, is free. Maude, well, we'll be going there in a minute. But I got a note, and this comes from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan, who expands the conversation and the consciousness and the intelligence. You know, I get an email from Diane in Kansas, Stan, and my IQ goes up. Diane says, I enjoy instances where business pragmatism collides with right-wing backwards lunacy. In other situations, we see health insurance companies wanting to keep aspects of the Affordable Care Act and other insurance companies taking the risks involved with climate change very seriously. I want to see these tensions become explicit, because I don't want the uneasy political alliance between the business and religious sectors to hold. Hopefully, it will be torn asunder due to the contradictions inherent in the artificial union of business and religion. Same thing with religion and government. Same thing with business and government. Some boundaries are there for a reason, but then a lack of reason is the problem under discussion, isn't it? And it is. But the other thing that's under discussion that I think Diane draws a bright line, a big bright circle around, is that the marriages of, as she notes, business and religion, religion and government, business and government, what we're talking about is hoping for the essential failure of fascism. Because that's what we're talking about. And all of these unholy alliances are essentially fascistic in nature. And we are we not, anti-fascists? So I think it is absolutely, not to say acceptable. No, it's absolutely essential that we see these boundaries shattered. I mean, really? Jesus chased the money changers out of the temple, and the evangelical fundamentalists want to get up on the capitalism hill and die on that? You can sort it out, because I can't. A note, we are $50 away from being done with fundraising for the month of March and hopefully striding boldly into the month of April. We are very close to being current on every bill we have, which is just astonishing and takes a great big load off of the situation. So for all and sundry who might be interested, it'd be a great time to jump in with people like Reinhard and Jugapunch and Chris in Germany and Bill and Roger in Oregon. A great time to jump in. The PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com, and then the U.S. Postal Service is handy, too. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV25801. And I've got a note here from, just remind me, I want to share Roger's note. It's not really within the purview of this particular topic, but I do want to share it because it is certainly food for thought. And for the moment now, let me see here. Yeah, let's go check in with Bill in Cleveland. What's happening, Bill?
Oh, man. I just wanted to tell Jim to hang in there. When I moved from Cleveland to Lake County, I had like 5 dogs and 2 cats. Of course, they would call me a hoarder. Hoarder my ass. You take them to the pound, you know what's going to happen to those dogs?
Yeah.
That's it. Because people don't believe in spaying and neutering their pets, you know?
Right.
Can't do that. That's not the right thing to do. So my last one to go was a cat that was somewhere between 17 and 18 years old, this cat. And it was funny, when I'd come back from playing, I'd open the door and that cat would be standing there like a dog. I mean, he'd been around those canine critters for too long. He was the same way. I mean, he picked up so many of their traits, and great little cat. But, the truck driver, I used to listen to a lot of the overnight truck driving stuff out on WLW. Because the old man that ran the show, I knew him from his days with music, but these guys some of these drivers just sound like imbeciles. There's one guy his moniker is Brooklyn. And man, is this guy off?
Non-imbecile.
Yeah, because some of these I'm so damn paranoid sometimes. I wonder if that's why the power structure was happy to see Obama become president. Because when you had so many bigots in your country, hey, give them somebody to dislike, Focus their attention. Keep these people hating each other.
That way they'll never figure out who the real enemy is.
Yeah. It's the old story. Oh, a very old story.
Well, Jim just sent an email thanking you for your kind words.
Well, I know what pets are. There's a lot of Russians in this building that I live in. And man, do they like their? Because you have to have there's a limit on size for dogs in the place. But man, they have a bunch of these little guys running around here that are just friendly as they can be.
Pomeranians, Yorkshire Terriers, Chihuahuas.
Yep. Oh yeah, one of my dogs was a Chihuahua. This guy was so bull-legged and buck-toothed, and he was running back and forth across Euclid Avenue, and my one drummer caught him and said, "Bill, come on." I said, "Yeah." And that dog, when I come home at night, he'd crawl out from under the covers and he'd howl, and he'd take a look at me and I'd say, "Okay," and he'd go back under the covers and go back to his sleep. That was I just loved him. I couldn't, when you lose those guys one after another, but anyway, John has it right on the money with his. I used to go into truck stops if I was playing out of town because I like truck stop food. Maybe I'm.
Well, hell
wrong,
yeah!
Get a good
burger, and then, well, of course, we've had the long running discussion now about my favorite truck stop on earth, out at Kingdom City on I-70 in Missouri, where the biscuits come out about 2 o'clock in the morning and the gravy is just then being made. Oh, the sausage gravy, Bill. The sausage gravy.
Oh, don't even talk about it. I just found that there was a pancake house not far from here that actually sold a chicken fried steak, but they're moved out. Because this shopping center was huge when I was a kid in Cleveland Heights. It was a good place to go with a good book and find yourself a place to sit and drink coffee, smoke cigarettes, and the old young women that were walking by, and there was a Higbee's in the alleys, and Higbee's was a huge store in downtown Cleveland. If you ever seen the movie The Christmas Story, that's where the Santa Claus thing happens. And if you're watching that parade, they're going past a funny looking place that went in about 1880. It was the Soldiers and Sailors Monument, and their sculpting is just. The guy's loading this huge mortar shell in. The muscles are, unbelievable. It was a whole style of art going on at that time. And all of those monuments all over the Civil War battlefields there,
Some of those monuments got a little gaudy.
Yeah.
I mean, the one to Meade on Pennsylvania Avenue in D.C., it's just downright homoerotic.
Yeah. Well, the one that caught me when I was a kid on the Gettysburg battlefield, you come out in this glade and there's the Celtic cross with an Irish wolfhound curled at the bottom of it. So that Irish Brigade of the Army of the Potomac was, they made a name for themselves. They broke the Confederate line at the Sunken Road at Antietam. I remember I was writing to the guy that runs the Six Emperor Tyrannus column, and I said, Colonel, if George Thomas had been handling the Union Army at Antietam and McClellan, and he wrote back, yeah, the war would have in the East would have ended that day. He said, this guy would have crushed Lee. He said, you know, don't let reputations fool you with guys, you know? And, Thomas died pretty young. He had a stroke.
Yeah,
but he
did.
Was a Virginian. And, the Virginians called him a traitor, but I don't think so. The traitors were the men who traded those blue uniforms for gray. That was a traitor.
Bingo.
That was, if it happened today, this guy, what's his name, Bergdahl?
Oh, both, yeah.
They're going to prosecute him now?
Yeah.
Forgotten about it.
Well, but see, the right wing has demanded, you know, bring me the head of Alfredo Garcia, and by God, you know, the military knows where its bread's buttered. You know, nobody defends the Pentagon budget quite like a Republican does, so they're going to do that bidding.
See, so many people were happy with this volunteer army. This is what we had between the wars. You know, after the Civil War, was mostly volunteers anyhow, on both sides. The Southern started drafting in 62 and the Union in 63 with the July uprising in New York City, the New York draft riots. But I was always proud of the fact that we had a volunteer army when I was a kid there. They didn't bring the draft in until after December 7th, you know, I think. Maybe not. Maybe they kicked it in a gear. Because I think Roosevelt could see what was coming down the road. There's a lot of prejudice against Roosevelt. I've heard people use the term Jewsevelt. What?
Yeah.
And the more they call him Roosevelt instead of Roosevelt, you know, and maybe he... Like poor Harry Truman, he didn't even know about the atomic bomb until he became president. FDR didn't tell people things, you know. And the projects I lived in here in Cleveland, they were opened by Eleanor Roosevelt in 1939. When I lived there, they were 75 or 80% Caucasian.
Yes.
There was a time when, so, working men were... You know, they hadn't kicked into gear like it did after the war, where it got to a point where people were getting paid money, you know, to work. And now that's the whole problem that I see is if you don't go to college, jobs are tough. And even if you do go to college, jobs are tough. I think they've been working for years to try to lower the wages of the American public.
That's all conservatives. So at the end of the day, no matter how many different issues they try to bring up, what you finally find is that conserving cheap labor. That's all they're about. Yeah, sure,
yeah,
they got their religious issues, they got their bigotry issues, they got they've got their anti-constitutional issues. But the only reason they want any of this stuff is because sooner or later they can translate it into cheap labor bills.
Yeah, we've always had this love affair with China. Even when Chiang Kai-shek, the creep that he was running, we poured millions of dollars. I knew guys who flew that thing over the hump from India to China, you know, knew two of them.
Yes.
Because that was one thing that, as I went through life, the World War II vets were still around, and the Korean vets were for sure around. And these guys talked. And I feel that the big... Street protests did not help the Vietnam War any, but I think what really kicked in the ass was when men came home from there and started to talk to their families about the things they had seen and done, and they didn't like very much. And the old story, guys who have been there, which I was blessed, I wanted to be there when I was a little child. I thought to join the Army was a big deal and a horrible thing to do. Well, that's because all I heard from people around me was World War II, you know. These were the people that were the adults. I had cousins that were older than me that actually went marching through Germany, and what they liked is when that war ended, you're an American in Germany with money, Bob. Oh, yeah.
Life could be good.
If you had cigarettes, you were... Jesus Christ didn't have the power you did when you had smokes.
Well, you...
I don't know what it is about tobacco addiction. It's probably as strong as any other addiction we have in this country.
Nicotine is actually exponentially more addictive than heroin.
Yeah.
At least that's what they said. That's old C. Everett Koop said years and years ago. Bill, good talking to you, my friend, and we will hopefully talk soon.
Take care. Hang in there.
All right. You take care. Bye now.
Good night.
Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. It's about 10 minutes before the hour, about 10 minutes left in the program, and it's amazing how the way how things work out sometimes. I said, remind me to share with you Roger from Oregon's letter, and Bill had no idea, but there it is. He opened the door because it concerns Bo Bergdahl. Roger writes, I heard some nonsense that the proceeds of spending millions more taxpayer dollars on the Soldier Bergdahl case had resulted in making a public pronouncement of a decision to use the highly subjectively worded Uniform Code of Military Justice Article 99 as a basis for discrediting the soldier in advance formal statement he asked to make. He must have some very salient facts to divulge about his time in Afghanistan in order to merit such offensive action against him. My guess, and let's be clear, Roger says, this is just my guesswork, is that some very serious military infractions occurred before he walked off base that night in June 2009. Recall that the Army was happy enough with his behavior a year later that they promoted him in absentia to specialist June 2010. A year after that, they promoted him to sergeant June 2011. So we know that after 2 years of investigation and full rotation of his unit stateside, he was still being promoted in absentia as fast as possible. However, now the PR machine is prepping us to disbelieve whatever statements he may make down the road. Some info for non-military listeners. The U.S. military has a built-in mechanism for service members needing to report serious infractions which involve their own chain of command. The mechanism is called requesting MAST. Roger is a Marine. It provides that anyone can request to speak directly to anyone higher up in their chain of command, up to the commander-in-chief, to make a report in confidence about something that could not be resolved in the normal fashion. It does require that the one requesting MAST does not abuse the mechanism by requesting MAST at a higher level than necessary to resolve the matter. For example, if a private wants to file a report about his lieutenant, he would request MAST with a lieutenant's boss, a captain, or a major. If that private requested MAST with someone higher, the report would be taken, but the private would also be reprimanded for going higher than necessary. So this is my best guess, given the scant details available about Bo Bergdahl. Soldier Bergdahl witnessed a malpractice and reported it in a normal manner, but to no avail. Then he requests MAST to the highest authority on that base, also to no avail. Faced with a renegade command, it would then be his duty to leave that base and try to get to a non-renegade one and complete his MAST request report. By the way, Roger says, I had to request MAST once, but that was back in the 70s when everything still worked the way it was designed to. Back to the rug, signed Roger. And the thing is, we know that horrors were perpetrated by our troops in Afghanistan and in Iraq. And does what Roger describes sound so far from a possible explanation? Of course, the only way we can find out is to let the situation play out, and play out it will, and we will waste gobs of money appeasing a thirsty wing in this country. By the way, another a note coming from Carol. Mike Pence, governor of Indiana, has now canceled all of his personal appearances until Wednesday. Apparently, no one wants to see him at present. And with that, let's end on a giggle. A new promo for Indiana. Indiana, it's great to be a bigot.
Welcome to the Indianapolis Colts.
Oh, wait a minute.
Indiana is the crossroads of America, home to the Indianapolis Colts, the Indy 500, the world-class cities of Indianapolis and Bloomington, and that Hoosier hospitality that makes everyone welcome, especially bigots. Whether you're a family of bigots, a couple of bigots, or just an individual bigot, you can explore Indiana Dunes State Park, tour the covered bridges of Park County, and shame and humiliate people who are different from you to your heart's content. Indiana, it's a great place to be a bigot. Paid for by the Indiana Board of Terrible People.
You know what? I got a feeling that the Indiana Board of Terrible People is a terribly, see what I did there, powerful outfit. And so we are right on top of the close of yet another Moran Monday, the last Moran Monday of March 2015. April will have arrived by the time we reach our next Moran Monday. Titanic Tuesday, the last Titanic Tuesday of March, the last program of March, on its way tomorrow. And, by the way, happy birthday going out this last Monday of 2015. Happy birthday going out to our buddy Dr. John. Hope you had a wonderful day, John. A wonderful day indeed. So, I guess that's it. We will close the program this evening. $50 to go in the month of March, and if we can just keep on the same pace, we'll get out in front a little bit and stay current with all the bills, which is a minor miracle in its own right. Thank you, one and all, for joining in this evening. Hope you'll be back for Titanic Tuesday tomorrow. Thanks always go out to all of you who spend your precious finite time, however you do spend it, engaged in this little ongoing conversation. It is a signal honor that you choose to spend 3 hours of your day with our little community here, the Hornedanistas, of which you are one, of which we are many. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben informed me this evening that his congresswoman, Tammy Duckworth, has announced that she will challenge Mark Kirk in the Senate for his seat in Illinois. That'll be a good thing. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. A little technical update. Just installed a RAM upgrade in the MacBook, and Agnes and I are making significant progress in getting the studio rearranged to bring the new equipment in and hopefully make for a little bit simpler, and well, simpler one way, more complex in another, but expanding the reach and capability of what we do here. There are plans that are afoot. So we'll talk tomorrow evening, and always. Gina. It's all for you.